for inviting me. So here is the abstract of my talk divided into several items, so it looks like an outline. So basically, the conservation law for the angular momentum in curved space to be consistent with space-time requires that space-time should have not only curvature but also torsion. And in 1970s, researchers like Hell, Trautmann, Kopczynski found that torsion has this property that makes gravitational repulsion at very, very huge densities. So basically, and this suggests that inside a black hole, the collapsing matter, instead of reaching a singularity, collapses to a state of extremely huge density and hot temperature, and then has to bounce back. And the matter cannot go outside the event horizon, so it creates new space. So basically, torsion could be a mechanism allowing black holes to become wormholes and create baby universes, which was the idea a long time ago suggested by scientists such as Patria or Liz Mollin, Stephen Hawking, and others. Then also, I want to show today that combining torsion and quantum particle production right after the Big Bounce, which replaces the Big Bang singularity, also gives a quite simple, with only one free parameter, explanation of inflation, which does not have a lot of problems that scalar field inflation has. And also predictions of model of Big Bounce and inflation coming from spin and torsion can be tested against cosmic microwave background radiation. That, of course, because we want this to be physics. So we need to test against the data. Okay, so just the first initial slides, I can just go quickly because they're just like introductory slides. So here's the famous picture of evolution of the universe, except that I replaced Big Bang with Big Bounce. So here's the Big Bounce, and here is inflation. And after inflation, we enter the standard radiation-dominated era, which means what I'm going to talk today about is just those two things, Big Bounce and inflation. After that, torsion does not change anything, so you have standard cosmology. So, okay, of course, we know that Big Bang happened because it is extrapolating to the past in the time, the observation that universe is expanding. So, of course, there are like a lot of models of the universe, and my favorite model is that universe is closed. Now, of course, we don't know if universe is open, closed, or flat, but flat closed universe can be thought of as three-dimensional analog of two-dimensional surface of a sphere. So here's the balloon, which is expanding, and our universe would be three-dimensional surface of four-dimensional hypersphere, whose radius is the scale factor. So, of course, and the cosmology is about how the scale factor, which is the size of this balloon, in the three-dimensional analog, how the scale factor depends on time. And of course, well, universe could be also flat, which means it would not look like the balloon, but like a two-dimensional analog of flat universe would be a plane, and open universe would be in two-dimensional analogy like a saddle. Okay, so of course, cosmic microwave background radiation, of course. I get to this actually at the end of my talk because I try to propose something which could possibly explain what is the order of magnitude of those temperature variations. So we know that they are like approximately 10 to the minus 5 kelvins, those tiny variations to the temperature, which is 2.7 kelvin. So of course, problem of general relativity. So of course, cosmology is based on general relativity. The biggest problem of general relativity in my opinion, is that we have singularities, points of infinite density, which means then it becomes, they become unphysical because we cannot measure them. Also, generativity is incompatible with quantum mechanics. Still, of course, there are approaches, string theory, loop quantum gravity, and they are promising approaches and they're still developing. So possibly they could fix the problem. So we are looking for quantum gravity. But also there is one thing about angular momentum, because general relativity predicts that orbital angular momentum is conserved, and Dirac equation says that total orbital plus spin angular momentum is conserved. And a very nice way to fix this is to extend space-time to have torsion. In fact, actually, I want to say that by adding torsion to general relativity, we are not complicating. It may look like we are complicating, but most textbooks teach general relativity starting from the metric and then go to Christoffel symbols, curvature tensor, right? And when you do that, then you build Christoffel symbols from metric tensor and there is no torsion. And the argument for this is that we have to satisfy principle of equivalence, so there cannot be anything else. So if we would add torsion in this approach. However, it's a great book by Schrödinger, Space-Time Structure, very small book, which actually starts from tensors, like in the manifold, then this book introduces affine connection and makes the manifold connected, which means affine connection tells us how to do calculus in curved space. And then Schrödinger made metrically connected space-time by introducing metric. So metric is introduced after affine connection, which means affine connection is not constrained, which allows anti-symmetric part of affine connection, which is torsion tensor, to be not zero. Which means in this approach, making torsion zero would be actually additional assumption on affine connection. It does not propagate. In the simplest theory with torsion, which is Einstein-Cartan, Lagrangian density for gravitational field is proportional to Ricci's scalar, which has torsion in it, and the field equations say that torsion is proportional to spin density of matter. So in vacuum, spin density is zero, and torsion is also zero. Yeah, so there is no propagation of torsion. Yes, that was like the, yeah, he's actually, he initially was, I believe, considering theories with torsion, but he went into anti-symmetric metric.
Non-symmetric.
Yeah, non-symmetric metric tensor. Yeah, yes, thank you.
He did it because the torsion doesn't propagate.
Mm-hmm.
That's his opinion.
Yeah, thank you. So
you mentioned something about the principle of equivalence. So if you add torsion, so what happens to the principle of equivalence?
Then if you have space-time with torsion, then we can always create locally geodesic frame of reference in which metric is Minkowski, but torsion is a tensor, so you cannot do it, which means a principle of equivalence would be violated because now you don't have a flat space-time. However, torsion is significant, as I will mention later. Torsion is only, in Einstein-Cartan theory, torsion is only significant at densities above 10 to the 40, 50 kilograms per meter cube, which means principle of equivalence would be violated at those super high densities, which is much above even neutron stars, which means all regimes we are testing currently, they would not notice that torsion violates principle of equivalence. Yeah. So the simplest extension of general relativity to include torsion is Einstein-Cartan theory. So problems of cosmology, because of course I wanted to apply Einstein-Cartan to cosmology, is of course, Big Bang singularity, so related to problem of general relativity with singularities, but also if we explain or somehow show that there is no Big Bang singularity, then universe was doing something before. So the question is, what was before the Big Bang, right? And also, now we also have standard problems in cosmology, horizon and flatness problems. Well, they were problems maybe 40 years ago, not now. Of course, horizon and flatness problems were explained by theory of inflation. So universe somehow went through short period of accelerated expansion, exponential expansion called inflation. This solves horizon and flatness problems. Also, inflation nicely solves structure formation. The simplest model of inflation is based on a scalar field, and quantum fluctuations of scalar field get stretched to macroscopic scales, and they become seeds for density matter perturbations. So inflation is quite successful in predicting actually a lot of parameters in cosmic microwave background. However, the problem is that, which was posed by, there was like a recent paper by Steinhardt and Loeb and Ilias talking about problems of inflation, that inflation with scalar fields would favor power law inflation models, and Planck 2013 observations predict something called plateau. And I'll get to it this actually later. And they also argued that scalar field inflation models have problem of eternal inflation. Once inflation starts, it will last forever. And even like in this room, possibly something could happen, and that inflation could be turned on, right? And we don't have evidence that things were happening in solar system, at least in our neighborhood. So there are some problems with inflationary models. Now, of course, there was this famous debate in Scientific American magazine like 2 years ago. So that after those two guys published the paper, then there was a response from fourth Nobel Prize laureates and like several other people such as Stephen Hawking, and they were defending inflation. So there's this quite nice debate about inflation. So, but here, what I want to show that Einstein-Cartan can do Big Bounce and inflation together. And by the way, those three guys, Ilias, Loeb, and Steinhardt, in the article opposing inflation, they were strongly supporting Big Bounce, and they wanted to discredit inflation. And the response was inflation. So here, Einstein-Cartan can do both, actually, so can unify. So there's no more conflict, probably. This was the also talk for students at UWO. So how to visualize torsion? Well, so like it was just make visualization that it's like a twisting of rod versus bending of rod. However, the geometrical explanation of torsion is also, so I'll do this with my hands. So if you have two very tiny vectors, you can make infinitesimal parallel transport. So we can make the parallel transport of this vector against the other one, or we can do the other way. And actually, we will reach the same point. Doesn't matter which vector goes along which one. And this happens without torsion. In torsion, we break the parallelogram. So actually, we don't reach the same point, which means translations don't commute in torsion. So this is geometrical interpretation.
So the two rods, don't need inflation.
Yes.
What's wrong with that?
They were proposing Big Bounce, and immediately right after the Big Bounce, you get accelerated expansion also, because right, universe has to accelerate. I'm sorry?
Depends on what you mean.
Yeah, of course. So like they were basically They were saying that that universe did not have to go through exponential expansion. It was just accelerated. With the cosmological constant at the beginning.
If you needed to sense a universe, Yes.
That's equivalent, yes. Yes.
Anyway, sorry.
Yeah, they were, yeah.
You
yes, thank you. Okay, so here now some mathematics. Okay, so Aishan Kartan, and also actually the full name should be probably Aishan Kartan Shama Kibble theory, is basically based on the same Lagrangian density for gravitational field as general relativity. So Lagrangian is proportional to Ricci scalar, but now the affine connection which builds the curvature tensor and Ricci scalar now has anti-symmetric part different from zero, right? So here is the, oops, not this, I meant this, right? So torsion is anti-symmetric part of the affine connection, so now we have the same Lagrangian density, and then now we have two independent variables in Aishan-Kartan theory. We have metric tensor and torsion tensor. So now we have to make the variation of the action of matter and gravitational field with respect to those two variables. So, so variation with, of the action of gravitational field and matter together with respect to torsion tensor gives Kartan equations, and here is the linear combination of a torsion tensor and its contraction, torsion vector. And here is the spin density. Spin density is the variation of Lagrangian of matter with respect to a contortion tensor, which is linear combination of torsion tensor. So this spin density. So basically, Aishan-Kartan theory already says that if spin density of vacuum is zero, then torsion will be zero. So in vacuum, Aishan-Kartan theory makes torsion equal to zero, which means affine connection becomes Christoffel, and Aishan-Kartan reduces to general relativity. Now here, when you make the variation of total action with respect to metric tensor, you get Einstein equations. And now, so here's the Einstein tensor, here's energy momentum tensor, and here there's this this correction. So this correction actually was initially on the left-hand side because Einstein tensor is Riemannian tensor, but we also have contributions from torsion to the curvature. So they were initially on the left-hand side, but now since, so here I have terms with torsion, but now I can replace torsion with spin density using linear relation and move those terms on the right-hand side.
So you have, say, torsion proportional to spin density, so this is not a vacuum. If you have a vacuum, then your torsion will vanish.
Yes.
So can I not think of this additional term on the right-hand side as being just a simple representation of the stress energy of the spin, associated with spin?
Yes, yes, exactly. This big term can be, so basically, this equation tells us that we just can reformulate Aishan-Kartan theory and write as general relativity with corrections to energy momentum tensor coming from spin. So yes.
Scale.
This scale?
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. So basically, around these densities, this correction will be comparable with energy momentum tensor. So basically, let's say at 10 to the 17, which is density in neutron stars, this correction will be negligible relative to energy.
Is that Planck density?
No. Planck is 10 to the 90, 10 to the 96. I think, yeah, so.
So it comes in naturally, you've got this constant square showing.
Yes, correct.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because.
Okay. Supermassive black hole, like Sagittarius A star, the density inside, the mass of the object is 4 million solar masses. The density is about 1,000 times that of water. mass.
No, that's correct. Yeah, of course. In supermassive, well, but on the other side of event horizon, when matter collapses, then it could reach those densities, and then it is where we have to turn on torsion. Yes, but I think they are not still at this density because neutron stars has 10 to the 17. So this will be only inside black holes or at the Big Bang. The universe, we can get those densities. So basically torsion, even in neutron stars, torsion is not important, which means we don't need this, except those cases where we have extremely high densities, and that's where we need some medicine, because we want to fix singularity problem, and torsion could be the solution for this.
What is that density in natural units?
In natural units? In natural units, it was something like... Okay, this is... Actually, I did it 2 days ago. It is square of mass of electron times square of Planck mass.
Okay, something...
So I assumed here electrons. If I put neutrons, protons, or something heavier, then this number will be a little higher. But I wanted the lower bound. Well, neutrinos would be lower, but yes, yes, much more. 10 to the 17 is the nuclear density. Yes, yes. Okay. So now that was this nice paper of Papa Petro, like in the 50s, about multiple expansion of conservation of energy momentum tensor. And in 1990, like there was a paper extending Papapetro paper to space-time with torsion, and basically this paper derived that from multiple expansion you can basically approximate a spin tensor as something called spin fluid. So basically here is some formulas. So basically we have some rank 2 tensor. And when you take those corrections, when you take the spin density and plug in to here, and then you write Einstein equations with this corrected energy momentum tensor for the universe, we can get 2 Friedmann equations. So those are Friedmann equations for Einstein-Cartan cosmology, and they look almost like regular Einstein-Friedmann equations, except you have negative correction to energy density and negative correction to pressure.
What's the equation of motion for the spin density? You haven't given a closed system. You gave us GAP for the source.
Yes, I did. Yes, of course, there is no equation for S, but later I reformulate everything in terms of temperature. So basically, here, in the same approximation, so this term does not depend on orientations of spin because you have like square, but this term can be shown to be proportional to the square of number density of fermions. So basically, now instead of using spin density squared, I'm using number density of fermions. And then for number density of fermions, I can go to statistical physics and relate n to the cube, the third power of temperature. And that's what the next slide would be.
So if I'm imagining a boson distribution collapsing, you have no corrections whatsoever?
Yeah, bosons, okay, so, photons do not couple to torsion because this would violate gauge invariance. Now W and Z and gluons, I don't know. Like I haven't seen anything in the literature on that. So and all fermions do. Now why all fermions also? So spin comes only from fermions, and actually it comes from the argument if you write Dirac Lagrangian in curved space. Then there will be so covariant derivative of the spinor will have contortion in it, and then contortion will be proportional to the square of the spinor fields, which comes from Cartan equation. So basically, there are some from the Lagrangian density for Dirac field, we can construct spin density. And yeah, this spin density basically can be plugged into the equation. So yeah, so the fermions contribute to the torsion because they produce spin density.
You also need them to all be aligned with each other, right?
Actually, not necessarily. So basically, okay, so this is based on the paper in 1974 by Hell and collaborators. So Trautmann and Kopczynski before Hell, they showed that you can get those negative corrections which make gravitational repulsion for aligned spins. So there were like, there are some special cases. But then in 1974, Hell, Kerlich, and van der Heide and Nestor wrote a paper showing that in spin fluid approximation, you can get it also for random spins. Because here what matters,
the
yes, the square matters, the average square. So it's like a standard deviation kind of, yeah.
Quick comment. A long time ago, Papa Petra and Carl published equations of motion spinning particles.
Yes.
These particles do not belong to the
test. Yes, correct. This is, yes, it does. Yeah, there was a question. Particles in spin move on what paths, right? And there was one view that either on autoparallel or geodesics, and it is between somehow, right? So yeah, it's a great paper, yes.
Paper by Matheson.
Yes, and Matheson and Dixon, right? Yes, like all this, yeah. So we have, okay, so those are Friedmann equations. And then now using statistical physics, right, so we go to a relativistic regime because we are in the early universe. So energy is three times pressure. Energy is proportional to the fourth power of temperature, so like Stefan Boltzmann law, and also the fermion density proportional third power of temperature. So then when you substitute energy density and pressure here, you get first Friedmann equations is this equation. Those H constants, those are like combinations of constants which come from statistical physics, and they depend on the number of degrees of freedom of particles. Now the second Friedmann equation can be reformulated as like in this form, and actually quite remarkably, the same equation exists without torsion. Yeah, because there is. So actually, in Einstein-Cartan theory, with spin fluid approximation, and this equation basically tells us that product of scale factor and temperature is constant. So second equation is the same as the as without torsion, but the first equation has this negative correction to energy density. So here, you can create some non-dimensional temperature x and non-dimensional scale factor y, and also make non-dimensional time, and those two equations can be written in this nice form. Actually, the first equation could be even integrated analytically. Actually, here in this paper, which was published in January, so like 2 months ago, me and my student Gabe Unger, we actually integrated this equation. The solution is in terms of Jacobi elliptic functions. So it's analytical. Now, if you put cosmological constant, then it would be more difficult. But then cosmological constant is probably important only in the regime when we can forget torsion, right? So there's no need to do everything together. So we have those two equations. And now generating the bounds. OK, so here's we can substitute the second equation to the first equation, eliminate x, and here's the equation which involves only scale factor. And actually, now you can analyze turning points of this equation. Well, first of all, well, this equation tells us, and I actually assumed quietly here that universe is closed. However, if it's open or flat, actually, my statement in a moment would be the same. Basically, this equation shows that there is no singularity, because if there is, if you go backwards in time and y, which is the scale factor, would like to reach zero, then this term would become negative, and this term would beat, would dominate over this term. So right-hand side would become negative. And for closed universe, right-hand side, left-hand side is positive. For op- for flat universe, left-hand side is, non-negative. And for open universe, this would be minus one. But if this term becomes very, very negative, basically the whole thing would become smaller than minus one. So actually, in all three models of the universe, flat, open, or closed, we don't have singularity. Y cannot be zero. So here, basically, spin and torsion together remove singularity. Now, we can find turning points of this equation when this dot of Y equal to zero. And with my student, we found, well, in this January paper, that actually you can have two turning points, one turning point, or no turning point. So basically, this constant is related to the product of scale factor and temperature, which is the product is constant. So basically, and now this is product of non-dimensional scale factor and temperature, because this was here, the C constant is related to scale factor times temperature. So basically, this constant has to be bigger than some threshold for closed universe to exist. So we found that closed universe only exists if the product of scale factor and temperature is above some threshold. Below that, basically, you get like imaginary, like there's no turning points.
So this is contingent on the assumption that the number density of fermions is a well-defined concept. So you made that thermodynamic relationship.
Yes.
Temperature.
Yes.
But when you get to extremely high density, you have no idea what.
Yeah, of course. Of course. Thank you. That was the assumption, and of course, probably we have to do something more about it. But yes, we assumed equilibrium just to see what happens. Yeah. So
can I ask? This is exactly the same equation as a loop quantum cosmology.
As who?
Loop quantum cosmology.
Thank you. Yeah. This is yes. Like loop quantum. Loop quantum cosmology. Well, it is similar.
That would be T to the A.
But yeah.
Okay, so there's one. Okay.
It's so similar. Yes. Because yeah, loop quantum gravity recently also got the bounce by making the energy density possibly negative. So basically, we found that closed universe can exist only if the product of temperature and scale factor is above some threshold. Open and flat universes, they don't have this constraint about this product of scale factor and temperature. However, they are also non-singular. So here we kind of graphed some graphs, right? How universe looks for several values of C. So C has to be bigger than square root of 8/9. So we get this nice bounces. So basically, here there's like a suggestion, possibly, that if universe is closed and was formed, that it must have been formed when this constant C reached the threshold. However, now when you calculate for present universe, if we have some knowledge about scale factor, I think we know what's the lower limit of scale factor and temperature, then this number has, this C right now is here, right? So C actually, from the moment when closed universe was formed to the present moment, C went from square root of 8/9 to this huge number, right? And inflation did that. Inflation did that because during inflation, temperature is approximately constant, but scale factor grows, right? And of course now we go towards inflation. Okay, so if there is no other assumptions, then actually I go back to here. If universe is closed, we have minimum scale factor because singularities are gone, and we also have maximum scale factor because closed universe, according to Friedmann equations, like so in regime when universe is big, we can forget torsion term. We have closed universe will reach maximum scale factor and start shrinking. So now here I will show. So basically, if there was nothing more in addition to what I said, the closed universe would be scale factor would be oscillating. It will go between minimum and maximum scale factor, and our universe would be oscillatory, which is actually one of the models, right? Like Steinhardt-Turok models, right? So yes.
So how do you know that this makes sense? So if one thing you're solving the Friedman equations using the symmetries here.
Yes.
You end up with an ODE system that is something simple you can solve for. But in this theory, that would not be a preferred solution. You're breaking all sorts of symmetries, especially when you go to high densities. Yet you keep using the same ODE. So how do you know?
Well, okay. So this is the beginning. So of course, like. I don't know a lot, right? So basically, I just try to start with something simple and see what happens. And of course, then, like, because, like, for example, we have anisotropies, we have shear corrections to stress energy tensor, which could.
In the GR case, at least we know that those things would not see the significant break. Here, you have something, all the sign changes the sign of your vector stress energy tensor, you can get exponential blow up. So any small departure completely break.
Yeah, of course. And actually, I want to get to this because there are two regimes that we can get something which completely blow up, but we can also have something which actually will not. So I want to get to inflation.
But this is where I'm pushing. I'm trying to understand how do you know that you have the right to do this. Because you can make a very strong assumption, which is leading you in a particular path.
Yes.
We don't know if that's a real path. That's what I'm trying to understand.
Yeah, of course. Like, well. So I would say what motivates me here is basically curiosity. What I can find out. And
I agree, but there are bold claims that come with it, and then I want to understand to what degree I'm going to be happy with the bold claims.
Well.
So are you worried about instability? That if you're as small as it,
I'm not worried that the assumptions here, but the instability completely break isotropy.
Yes.
And in that case, then why would I keep trusting a particular system of equations, which is the one I'm using to say this is what's going to happen?
And actually, I got email from John Barrow actually pointing out to me that when you put shear corrections to tensor, they may also scale as quickly as the corrections from spin tensor, so you have to analyze them. And of course, then I'm aware that I want to see what happens in presence of torsion, how they behave. So of course, homogeneous and homogeneity and isotropy, right? And of course, yeah, that's a strong assumption, I agree.
The standard inflation theory, you have to assume a large patch initially, which is homogeneous. Why do you don't get inflation? The
measure doesn't work.
You have to have homogeneous inflation point. This is well known. So you're saying you have an inhomogeneous universe.
I have
something,
what?
You have an inhomogeneous universe.
Yes, so actually, I will mention this in the last slides, because right now I don't put inhomogeneity yet. I just assumed homogeneous and isotropic, but.
You can't get inflation with an inhomogeneous universe. Work.
Well, that's what I want to argue that from spin and torsion. I want to show.
It's a great time to get to.
Thank you. Yes, because that's the hot point. Yeah. So basically, here just like one quick thing that basically, so universe with closed universe would be oscillating. So we want for universe to reach dark energy era, universe has to reach the size. Where cosmological constant is the dominant term. So universe has to be more massive. So basically what happens is that if we add quantum particle production at the bounce, and of course there is still like a lot of phenomenology about it because we don't know actually the exact theory of that. We don't know quantum gravity yet completely. But if we assume that at a bounce, quantum effects produce a lot of matter, antimatter particles, then what will happen is that each bounce will start a cycle which will last longer, and because we have more total energy in the universe.
So you can't run equally well in forward and backward directions. If I reverse that, how do I know that I'm not losing particles when I collapse?
The topic is still progressing, because what I looked at was like the papers done in like 1970s, 1960s, Zeldovich, Starobinsky, Parker, quantum production, and I tried to use what they did. But yes, it is, and now of course we don't know full quantum theory of gravity. So, but they were saying that it goes one forward in time. Yeah, so basically. I kind of collected like several pieces to create something. So universe, when universe after maybe five bounces or maybe seven bounces, doesn't it depends on how much new matter we produce, reaches the size where dark energy is dominant, then it will leave the cycles and starts expanding to infinity. And actually, this nice analysis. How the cosmological constant has to be related to the total mass of the universe is in Bondi paper. Bondi was analyzing actually closed universe with cosmological constant. And this picture comes from the book by Lord, like a very nice small book, which has so much actually in it. So this picture comes from that. So here now, inflation. So I'll just go back to this equation. So here is the, here is one of those, one of the equations, right, which tells us that a times t is constant, yeah? So, but this is only with spin and torsion without quantum production. So, so near the bounce, we introduce particle production, and actually the simplest term which agrees with dimensional analysis, so yes, it is another assumption, but also I found that there are some groups in California doing research on quantum particle production, and they all analyze different functions of Hubble parameters. So they assume that particle production rate is some function of Hubble parameter. But Hubble to the fourth gives the simplest dimensionally consistent rate of particle production. So when we calculate how particle production creates increases number density, you can also calculate how temperature increases because of this. And basically, this equation a dot over a plus t dot over t equal to zero becomes now this equation. And this comes from the fourth power of Hubble, because here's the cube and here's first power. So you have this equation. Okay. And now, when you analyze this equation, this is what happens. So at the big bounce, actually there may be more bounces than one. If our universe was produced by the big bounce, then this big bounce is the last of the bounces which might have happened before. So here's this equation. At the big bounce, a dot is zero. And initially after big bounce, this term is almost zero. So basically this equation reduces to standard equation a dot over a plus t dot over t equal to zero. However, a dot increases. Universe starts from the bounce, so a dot increases, and this term can actually reach one. This term actually even can become bigger than one. If this term becomes bigger than one, then left-hand side switches the sign, and we have the situation where growing universe increases temperature, and this will never stop. This will be eternal inflation. So eternal inflation comes here as a possibility if this term is bigger than one. Well, to avoid eternal inflation, we don't want this term to be bigger than one, but we want this term to be almost one and at its maximum. So if we... So now why? So if this term becomes almost one, then left-hand side becomes zero, then temperature is constant, almost constant. But at the same time, if this term is almost one, and temperature is constant already from this equation. If temperature is constant, then this term being constant, almost one, tells us that Hubble parameter is constant, because A dot over A. So basically here we have that, we have a period of expansion of the universe where we have exponential, nearly exponential expansion at constant temperature. But constant temperature means constant energy density. So basically here, from this equation, we get inflation. We have period of exponential expansion at constant temperature. So this is how, this is basically how particle production creates inflation. Actually, in this equation, there is no torsion, because this equation would be also good for without torsion. However, without torsion, we would have Big Bang singularity. So torsion fixes singularity, and thanks to fixing singularity, right after Big Bangs, we have accelerations, so these terms grow and basically can reach one. Yes. Okay. So this is the case that so this beta is the term which is proper, basically this particle production rate is beta times fourth power of Hubble times some fundamental constants, and the beta is particle production rate, which is the only free parameter. We don't know what this parameter is. And to avoid internal inflation, the maximum of this function will be one when beta is approximately equal to this, which means beta has to be smaller than that. Now, if particle production rate is much smaller than this, we will never get like inflation, we'll get like quasi-inflation. But to get inflation, which gives us a lot of e-folds, we need beta to be close to this parameter. Now, actually, there are several papers. So Zeldovich, Strabinsky, Parker, they wrote like several papers, and they differ. All these papers differ at the values of this part of coefficient. However, one of the papers says it should be 1 over 360 pi. Well, that's kind of close. And second paper, 1 over 240 pi. All right. So, okay. So maybe it is not fine-tuning. Maybe it is just something actually coming out from quantum gravity. I don't know. So here I have to admit that I have one free parameter, right, which I don't know what it is, but I'm assuming something. And if this parameter is close to this, but smaller than this value, we will have inflation. If it's a little smaller, then we will not get full inflation. It will be like quasi-inflation, and probably we need more bounces, probably, to
Yes,
that's correct. And now what I want to say here, that I have only one free parameter, and like the simplest scalar field model of inflation has two. So this is simpler, I would say, in terms of number of parameters.
But you still have to explain the fluctuation of CMB.
Of course. This is very, so I want to get to the, it took my last slide actually, yes, because that's very important. Yeah. So with my collaborator Shantanu Desai, he was doing numerics, I was doing theory. Numerically, we analyzed, for example, how many bounces we get. So if the beta, so beta critical is 1 over 929, right? So if beta is very close to critical value, we get one bounce. If beta gets smaller, we get more bounces, which means eventually universe will reach the size where you can expand to infinity, but it have to happen after several bounces. We also analyzed, for example, how number of e-folds during inflation, number of e-folds could depend on initial scale factor, which it does not really. However, it depends on the particle production. So particle production is actually a very important parameter here, because it changes things, and initial scale factor, it's not really super important. So there was like one conclusion. Here we have some graphs how, like for example, how dynamics happens. Here is, for example, scale factor as a function of time. You have inflation, and then, well, this actually looks kind of smoother if you go to bigger accuracy, but basically we have some inflation dynamics. But here's my favorite picture from this from our paper. We used paper by Ellis and Madsen. It was like a paper which basically says that if you have dynamics of the universe, you can go backwards and you can create, you can construct backwards what scalar field potential would give you the dynamics you want. So what my colleague did, that he took the solutions of our equations with spin and torsion, and he found what scalar field would give the same dynamics, what kind of potential. Because CMB data uses the scalar field potential models, right? So we kind of want to get equivalent potential. So we don't introduce scalar field, but we say, what would be the equivalent scalar field giving the same potential? And we found this. And this is plateau. It looks like plateau. So it looks like, and actually the paper by Ilias, Steinhardt, and Loeb actually argued that inflation models should be plateau, but scalar field models, they give like power law, right? So basically I would say here that 2013 Planck data supports plateau, but we got plateau, right? So kind of we say that Planck 2013 data is nice to our model.
No, but no, you're kind of jumping a step because there's an additional scalar field, but your model didn't have an additional propagating degree of freedom, so you have to actually give it an additional propagating degree of freedom.
Oh well, I don't introduce scalar field.
But if you don't, then you don't get perturbations because I mean that's how you get.
Yeah, of course. This is the standard model of the density perturbations comes from scalar field. Yes. So basically, yeah, this is my last slide, which is kind of new work, but this is the idea. Because of course, if I want to get rid of scalar field to explain exponential inflation, I also have to explain where the perturbations come from. Yeah, of course. Yeah. So. Here's some other pictures, how, yeah, again, this particle production rate, and here's the scalar spectral index. So we have a regime where it is consistent with the observed value and tensor to scalar ratio. So basically, and they are all these graphs showing scalar spectral ratio and tensor to scalar spectral index and tensor to scalar ratio, and also number of e-folds are consistent for some range of this parameter beta. Okay, here's just kind of this first page of this article, which started the debate between Steinhardt, Loeb, Ias, and 40-something scientists who wrote the response. Okay, so here, primordial fluctuations. So here, okay, so this is still ongoing, although like I wrote one paper already published on this, but it's not, it has to be still progressed. So basically, primordial fluctuations. So scalar field, that's a standard theory that scalar field creates primordial fluctuations through quantum fluctuations of the field. But, so you can construct a mechanical Lagrangian, which through Lagrange equations gives you Friedmann equations. So basically, we can treat universe as mechanical system. This is called mini superspace approximation. So this was done already. And here's the Lagrangian. If you write, so in classical mechanics, Lagrangian is function of generalized coordinates. So here's the Lagrangian, which depends on scale factor and its derivatives. And here's energy density. And actually this can be obtained by integrating Lagrangian density for matter and gravitational field and integrating over space. So actually, this is not a guess. This can be obtained actually exactly. So when you write Lagrangian, so this Lagrangian for the whole universe, because it is Lagrangian density integrated over the volume of the universe. Of course, volume of the universe has to be finite, which means it is for a closed universe. So when you write Lagrange equations for this Lagrangian, you'll find second Friedmann equations. You'll get equation with pressure. However, if now this Lagrangian does not depend explicitly on time, so from symmetry in time in mechanics, we have conservation of energy. And actually, when you write energy from this Lagrange, and you find under condition that first Friedmann is satisfied, you find it's zero. So energy of the universe is zero. Kind of interesting, which was showed by several authors in the past using different methods, but here, like, so I think my paper was basically to showing energy of universe is zero from mini superspace Lagrangian. So that was the main point of the paper. But I did something. I started something at the end, and it's still ongoing. Basically, here's the idea. So once you have Lagrangian of the universe, then you can go farther. You can create momentum of the canonically conjugate momentum, right? Using mechanics. Even you can go even farther and go probably go to Hamilton's equations and Hamilton-Jacobi equation. This would be kind of nice to see what will happen. However, when you take momentum of the universe, then you can then we can impose uncertainty principle of the scale factor, which can be done also using Schwinger's principle. So actually, in the paper, I used Schwinger's variational principle to be like more exact, but you can get it also through uncertainty principle. This is uncertainty principle for the scale factor, which means when scale factor was very, very small, then you have this huge product here. So basically, the idea, which it has to be investigated further, is that if you treat universe as the whole thing with the scale factor and apply Heisenberg principle to the scale factor, because scale factor is now the generalized coordinate, and you can do this in quantum mechanics. So basically, we make universe quantum, kind of. And the idea is that early universe had very, very small scale factor, so we had fluctuations of the scale factor. So basically, it is quantum fluctuations of the scale factor itself, which actually they get stretched during inflation, and they see the premodal perturbations. So this is the idea, which I think I combined this equation with several previous equations to get like one equation, but I got stuck, so I need to go forward. But this is the idea, how possibly perturbations could be created without scalar field. But of course, this has to be progressed. So here, just my last two slides. So here's the idea that Reich, Patria, Lise Molin, and even Stephen Hawking in his essay book, and several other authors were claiming that a black hole can make universe on the other side of the event horizon. Yeah, so basically, because torsion fixes singularity problem, then matter, basically, this is a scenario. Matter collapses, creates event horizon. On the other side of event horizon, matter collapses more. It cannot reach singularity because torsion turns on at densities 10 to the 45 kilograms per meter cube. Then matter has to bounce and has to bounce back somewhere. It cannot go back through the original event horizon, has to go somewhere else. It creates new space. So this was basically what those baby universes people were suggesting.
I apologize, I had to miss the beginning of the talk. Did you show that torsion, I've heard about torsion fixing the singularity in the FRW background. Did you show that it fixes the singularity problem
yes.
more generally? Or in FRW?
Good question. This was only for FL, yeah, Robertson-Walker metric, yes.
It's quite a different thing to solve it in the middle of a black hole.
Yeah, of course, it is actually, which means, of course, so I know that like Garfinkel, for example, like there's like numerical papers analyzing collapse in the black hole. So there were like two papers like 10 years ago, I believe, saying that numerical simulations are showing that that each point evolves towards singularity in black hole, as it was. Yes, like locally homogeneous and isotropic universe. Yes. So basically, using this assumption, basically output torsion into that. But of course, simulations probably should show.
Could I ask about that though? So did you show that effort? So each, what happens is that ultra locality story is that every little patch behaves like its own individual Kasner universe, but not like a effort W universe. In other words, effort W plus anisotropy.
Yeah, of course.
Did you show, or do you find?
Not yet. And of course, this actually relates to the previous question about considering anisotropies. So of course, yes, it is just without, but I'm aware that there may be some drastical change, right? So so basically, Einstein-Cartan, with all these assumptions, right, about isotropy and homogeneity, would support the mechanism, the Smolin scenario of universes producing black holes producing baby universes, right? So, okay. And my last slide is kind of my research is like on trying to analyze applying Einstein-Cartan theory to like a lot of things and see what happens. So there was a paper in 8 years ago. Basically, if you write Dirac equation in presence of torsion, you get nonlinear cubic term in spinor fields, which was actually found by Keeble for the first time, that you get the spin-spin interaction. You get a term in Lagrangian, which is when you rewrite Einstein-Cartan as equivalent general relativistic Lagrangian with those corrections, you find that those corrections are quartic in spinor fields, which means Dirac equation gets a cubic term. And actually, with torsion, so there was this paper 8 years ago that in the presence of torsion, Hell data equation possibly could be asymmetric under charge conjugation. So maybe possibly torsion could introduce some asymmetry between matter and antimatter in the LA universe, but only in the LA universe, not now, because now we don't observe any asymmetry, but possibly it could be some asymmetry. Then there is another paper was that if the metric, if you write Einstein-Cartan gravity Lagrangian and then you make metric tensor function of torsion tensor, this is called purely affine gravity, and torsion tensor is now the only variable, and you make the field equations, you discover that you get Einstein equations with cosmological constant. And cosmological constant is the constant which multiplies the, which relates the square of the torsion tensor to the metric to make meters consistent. Yeah. So this like it was mathematical exercise, but I found it fascinating that you can have it. And finally, here's the idea still in progress, because if torsion makes translation don't commute and translations are commutators of momentum, then momenta should not commute in presence of torsion. If momenta don't commute, then you cannot integrate in momentum space in Feynman diagrams. You have to replace integrals with sums. And actually, I did this simple exercise to see what would happen. And I found that the finite integrals, they don't change the values almost at all. So these finite integrals replaced by sums, they preserve the values, however, logarithmically divergent integrals become finite. So possibly this could solve UV divergent. My acknowledgement to Shantanu Desai, Gabriel Unger, my student, and my University New Haven research program here. And here is the short summary of my talk. Thank you very much.
So, regarding the loss, you provided Lorentzian grids. You have a discrete sum. You provided Lorentzian grids.
Oh, you mean if there is, well, Carlo Rovelli gave a talk like several years ago at Phenomenology Symposium, and he was arguing that non-commutative geometry can be consistent with Lorentz symmetry.
Geometry is based on continuum. So it's not as a violin. Once you start doing this in lattice space, it's like lattice stuff.
Yeah, lattice in momentum, yes.
You have to take a continuum there. You get back to the version of the. Just one more comment. long time ago, published a gravity theory where I had not only the atomic theory of connection, not symmetric, but also GPU.
Uh-huh.
And Neil Kroish and I published a paper showing that it gets rid of the singularity inside the black hole. So there's a lot of different modulations.
Yeah, of course. Definitely. So, which means your model could also suggest that black holes make baby universes. Yeah, and loop quantum gravity as well. Yeah. So, yeah, definitely. Thank you.
Are there questions, Luis?
No, just going to restate my comment. But, I mean, like bullet point 3, 4, and 5 are very strong. But the point I made before, there's a big question there.
Yeah, of course.
You just throw everything to the trash.
Yeah, probably.
Check first.
Yeah, of course. So actually, I should say that all these statements should have the word may in them. So I'm going to add may right now to those statements. Yeah, thank you.
Later,
so it has to do with the anisotropy. Yes. So in the calculation, the assumptions of doing this, assuming infra-value, and you have an OB and you analyze your OB. When torsion begins to play a significant role, then who knows if you just change.
So you have to include
it. Yeah, of course, of course. And this actually, after John Barrow email, actually, it was like even like last year, I'm aware. And this should be the next step immediately, actually, after this.
Okay. Back on black holes, there's something I didn't really understand. Shouldn't we expect the bounce of black holes?
Bounce of black holes?
Bounce like from the primordial singularity, like from the universe, which is bouncing. Why not black holes bounce as well?
Oh, because what happens? Okay, what happens? So the bounce happens inside a black hole, but what happens after? We can never observe because the event horizon in our frame of reference forms after infinite time, and everything after, which means the bounce and the baby universe, this is in our infinite future. Like, in order to see what happens on the other side, you have to go there, right? So basically, for us, the collapsing star asymptotically become a black hole, and what is on the other side, it's not our, not in our time to observe.
You can imagine after opening radiation and the evaporation of black hole.
This is a perfect. This is a good question. What happens to the Hawking radiation? So I think.
Sorry, I just have to steal your presentation because I need to have that.
Yeah, of course.
So you guys can go on.
So my answer to what would happen to a black hole which form a baby universe on the other side of event horizon if you introduce Hawking radiation is that. So in standard GR, Hawking radiation evaporates a black hole, but what would happen in the wormhole, which connects, basically every black hole would become a wormhole connecting our universe to growing baby universe on the other side. So in my understanding, Hawking radiation would evaporate the bridge, which means the baby universe would disconnect from our universe. But all the information would go to the baby universe, so actually, and this was pointed out already by other authors that black holes making baby universes, this could solve the information paradox because information goes to the baby basically. So, and then Hawking radiation would disappear, would evaporate the bridge, the connection, and now the information is lost in some different universe. So that would be probably my thinking how it should happen.
So, unfortunately, Niyash took the slide that I was going to ask.
Oh.
The equation, the Zeldovich equation you wrote down, a particle product, that kind of approximate equation describing the back reaction of particle production on the FRW dynamics. What, it had a parameter beta in the numerator and a parameter h, little h sub c.
Yeah, there was.
Those?
Oh, okay, yeah. So, Okay, so beta is the particle production coefficient, and different papers have different values, but they all had like 1/700 of pi. So
you say the particle production coefficient, what do you mean by that?
Oh, it is the basically those papers gave expression of dn over dt, where n is number density of particles, and they wrote dn over dt equal to, and there were like several expressions, like several models, what this could be.
Dimensionless coefficient.
Yes.
And the right side proportional to h. So.
Yes. Uh-huh. Yes. So that's what I used.
H to the fourth.
Yes.
H to the fourth is.
Yeah.
And what was these little h?
Oh, those were, this was g, so in statistical physics, those g star, those g coefficients multiplied by some other constants, yes.
I see. So that's why you know the value in the standard.
Yes, I know, if you assume.
900 in the standard model.
Yes, and actually this 929 was done using, assuming that at the L universe, all the particles we are knowing in so that model were there and there was no more.
Right.
If there were more particles, then of course this would be different than 900, yes.
Okay. And sorry, and did you say that they, so on the one hand we have this empirically observed value of those coefficients, 929 from the standard model. On the other hand, did you say that Zeldovich or someone gave an independent calculation almost matched?
They were on the same order of magnitude. They were like, sometimes they were bigger, sometimes smaller, but like one paper had like 240 times pi.
I see, but you mean so they did a calculation in curve space, QFT in curve space?
Yes. Yes. They were using quantum effects in curved space.
Yeah.
However, I found different papers and there were different values, so I was not sure which one to use, but I was happy.
I would love to see them.
Yeah, definitely.
Equation beta over beta critical, or maybe it's unstable. There's any fluctuation.
Yeah, this is a good point. I mean, this, although, yeah, because beta is the, well, beta is the, I would say, well, beta in the models of Zeldovich, Parobinsky, and Parker. Those coefficients, they were like calculated through some integration. I don't remember if they were allowing variations, but could be. So yes, so I probably would be, well, if the beta was, maybe beta was, this would be an interesting scenario, if beta was lower than 1/929 and much lower, that perturbation will not go over, but close enough, so perturbation could get us closer to inflation. So maybe inflation was caused by perturbation of beta or something like that. Yes. Yes. So yeah, as we'll see, like there's like a lot of points which should be addressed. But I just wanted to show that how spin and torsion could propose something which can give inflation, but of course. Some points have to be fixed to make it like strong.
About whether anisotropy will mess things up, does torsion give an effective extra energy? So if you write the effect of torsion in terms of the effect on the Friedman equation. Does it give an effective energy density that grows faster or slower than a to the sixth? Or anisotropy gives this effective contribution to the energy density of the Friedman equation, which grows like a to the sixth, a to the minus six through the bank.
Yes.
It comes to dominate over most of.
Yes, and that's, yeah.
Does torsion grow faster or slower than, you know whether it grows faster or slower than a to the minus six?
So symmetric, so torsion, inhomogeneous and isotropic would be 1/8^6. However, in anisotropy, I don't know. If we add anisotropy and inhomogeneity, then I don't know yet what torsion does.
In the FRW context, they both grow as 8 minus 6.
Yes. So it is possible that anisotropy and inhomogeneity coming from GR grows like 1 over a to the 6 on the same level as torsion, so now they can grow both, but now I'm aware that it has to be checked what happens with anisotropies with torsion, because maybe they would grow like 1 over a to the 8, which would be also nice, but I don't know yet. So this has to be done, of course.
The torsion, the spin only is important for bigger than nuclear density.
Yes.
For present universe, no effect.
Yes, no effect. Unless there are some theorists, mainly in South America, like who extend Einstein-Cartan beyond, and they have theories of propagating torsion, and possibly and there are some like papers I've seen, like they try to explain dark sector of the universe. But right now, I was just doing pure Einstein-Cartan without. Actually, one exception. I think in one paper I put Holst term, which is the parity violating, just to see what happens. But that was just right now. I'm only in EC, but possibly could be. Thank you.